You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss. A very good Saturday morning to you. Crossing now to our US Bureau Chief, Simon Marks, in Washington, D.C. Hi, Simon.
Hello, Justine.
Thanks for joining us once again here in Singapore. Let's start off with those disappointing job numbers. Employers adding only 266,000 jobs in April, far below what economists had expected from March.
Way, way, way below. It was extraordinary, actually, watching that news break this morning on CNBC here in the United States, and the anchor couldn't quite believe what he was reading and actually sort of stopped and said, wait a second, I can't have got this right. I'm going to go and check the actual Bureau of Labor's website. And sure enough, he did get it right, because the report had shown that the economy only witnessed the creation of 266,000 new jobs in April, whereas economists and the market, and most importantly of all, the White House, was absolutely convinced that the number was going to be above 1 million. So convinced that on Thursday, President Biden had already made it known that on Friday morning at 11:30, he was going to be reacting publicly to the jobs numbers in an exchange with reporters at the White House. But given that the news was suddenly very different than the news that the market or the White House was expecting, the White House couldn't scrub that appearance. So the president had to make the most of a bad situation and, of course, engaged in the time-honored strategy when disappointing numbers come in, of telling reporters and the public not to sweat too much about the outcome of any particular single month. The White House saying that if you look at the numbers over the last 3 months, they show that 1.5 million jobs have been created in the United States. And President Biden also used it as an opportunity to urge Americans to get vaccinated, those who haven't, amid continuing concerns here that demand for vaccines are flagging. And he once again touted the benefits not just of the spending plan that he's already signed into law, but his infrastructure proposals and the American Families Plan, both of which have yet to be passed by Congress. And he used this as an opportunity to say, look, it's pretty apparent that America's economic recovery is going to be a steep climb, and therefore we really need to get those things done as quickly as possible in order to undergird society for any bumpiness that lies ahead. But look, there's no question that this was a big disappointment for the White House. Remember, a week ago, President Biden had just made his speech to that joint session of Congress. America, he said, is back. It is poised for takeoff. He kind of conjured up images of the United States economy having taxied to the runway and being ready to soar into the air. And suddenly today, there were quizzical faces evident on Wall Street, where investors were wondering whether perhaps the plane is still at the departure gate and the passengers are only just beginning to settle into their seats. The markets, I think it's worth saying, took all this in their stride. The Dow Jones Industrial Average ended the day up 0.66% in value. The S&P 500 up about 0.75 percentage point in value. The NASDAQ also in the same territory. The Wall Street Journal is suggesting that the dominant mood on Wall Street over the last few hours has been don't freak out yet. And certainly technology and some other stocks jumped as a result of renewed faith that ultimately the United States is going to be on the right track. But there's no question that this was a shock for the White House. It's absolutely not what they were expecting and not what they wanted to see. And there's some genuine confusion and uncertainty here, Justine, about why this number was so bad, with some evidence that a couple of sectors, particularly hospitality and restaurants, are simply finding it very, very difficult to find employees to fill vacancies. And that may seem counterintuitive in an economy that's got millions of people still out of work, but it's leading some economists to wonder whether some of those people have either not yet found themselves feeling sufficiently secure about the safety of returning to work with the pandemic still underway. 818 people died of COVID-19 in the United States on Thursday. We've seen those kind of numbers every day this week. This country is not out of the woods yet. Or is it possible that some of these employees have become used to a new style of work? They've taken other opportunities elsewhere. They're engaged in working from home. They don't want to go back to a traditional office or business setting. So there's in these numbers, you know, the White House says don't sweat about a single month. But there are people out there sweating about what this means and what it means about the structure of the American economy going forward.
Yeah, and as you say, not out of the woods yet. And, you know, Simon, that guidance that came in about wearing masks outdoors, despite that, some are still reluctant to shed those COVID-19 masks, saying they feel naked without the mask.
Yeah. And, you know, look, this is a very interesting time in the United States because, as you know, because we've talked about it so many times on the program, up until now, the kind of the mask burning brigade in the United States has been largely grassroots Republicans who have seen the face mask as an infringement of their personal freedom and their civil liberties. And Democrats who think of themselves as being, you know, more sentient intellectual people on their political side of the aisle have all responsibly engaged in face mask wearing and chided the approach of the Trump administration and Donald Trump himself for failing to be seen wearing a face mask in public very often. Oh, how the tables have turned here over the last week. We're suddenly hearing from supporters of President Trump who clearly want him to be, of President Biden, who clearly want President Biden to be the man who slays the COVID-19 dragon, who are saying that they believe that there are some in the Democratic Party constituency who have become addicted to COVID-19 and are too hesitant to get rid of their face masks. And so we've seen people with absolutely no medical training whatsoever coming from the Democratic side and going on television here in the United States over the last few weeks, telling people as soon as you're fully vaccinated, you must throw your face masks away in public settings. Well, you know, Dr. Anthony Fauci has been giving interviews here saying that unless and until the United States gets more Americans vaccinated and heads towards herd immunity, which still looks like it's going to be very elusive, even though President Biden this week set this new target of getting 70% of Americans at least one jab by Independence Day on July the 4th. Unless you dramatically advance that, there are still threats posed by the new variants of COVID-19 that keep showing up in the United States. And Dr. Fauci, who of course bedeviled Donald Trump back in the day, was on the receiving end of ire from some Democrats this week for giving an interview recently in which he said, well, he doesn't feel secure enough to go and sit down and have a meal indoors at a restaurant yet, and he certainly wouldn't get on board an aeroplane and fly anywhere just yet. Well, that kind of runs counter to the desire of the White House right now to project America as being that aeroplane that is just ready to roar down the runway and soar into the skies. And so there's definitely some pressure points building there between keen supporters of President Biden that want to spread the word that, you know, the country's putting COVID-19 behind itself, and others who say, well, hang on a second, with 800 people dying every day in the country of COVID-19, COVID-19 still responsible for more than one death in 10 every day in America. Is it really behind us?
You're listening to Asia First Weekend Edition. Me, Justine Moss, speaking to Simon Marks, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C. Simon, just staying with the vaccine and COVID-19, Pfizer now seeking full FDA approval for their vaccine beyond just, you know, their current emergency use.
Yeah, and that's a big moment. It's not going to happen immediately, and it's not going to happen quickly, but Pfizer is beginning the process that it is assumed here that Moderna and Johnson & Johnson and possibly also AstraZeneca will eventually pursue. What Pfizer essentially is saying is, OK, we've been used as an emergency treatment for COVID-19. Now there is sufficient documentation available, sufficient data to show that this is an entirely a highly safe and effective treatment for COVID-19. So make it official, make it formal, make it permanent. And what that will then do is have one immediate significant impact. At the moment, President Biden, as Commander-in-Chief of U.S. Armed Forces, cannot mandate members of the armed forces to get vaccinated for COVID-19 because it has only been granted emergency authorization. He can't require members of the armed forces to take the jab. Vaccine hesitancy in the armed forces is at a substantial level, 30 to 40% among general enlisted staff. Even within the elite Marine Corps, it's estimated to be in the 40 to 45% range. If there was a vaccine that was officially permanently recognized and authorized by the FDA, then the White House could begin to wander down the legal path of seeing whether the president could order the troops to get jabbed. And that would have a huge impact, coupled with the possibility of Pfizer's jab being authorized soon for emergency use by 12 to 15 year olds. That would really get you moving much more rapidly down that all important path towards herd immunity. So be interesting to see if that's a nettle that Joe Biden chooses to grasp. It would be very controversial, but it's definitely something that he could think about doing.
Simon, we've spoken about this before, about Georgia's voting, you know, changes to the voting law there. And now Texas lawmakers advancing a restrictive election bill. Republicans did overcome those Democratic efforts to derail the legislation. And it looks like some other states now are sort of poking around, having a look at perhaps changing their laws, too.
Oh, it's all the rage, Justine. The Texas House passed the measure that we talked about a few weeks ago. It will bar the sending out of mail-in ballot applications unless people have specifically requested them. In other words, you're not just going to open up your daily delivery of post here. And actually, this happened to us back in November of last year in the presidential election here in Washington, D.C. Mail-in ballot forms were sent out to people living across Washington, D.C., so that if you wanted to use one, you had one. You had one already in your kitchen. So you didn't need, if you chose not to go to the polling station, you didn't need to go to the polling station. Well, in Texas, they're now only going to send them out, once this is signed into law, by Governor Greg Abbott upon request. It's also going to implement very strict rules on the number of voting machines at polling places in major cities. There are elements in there about drop-off boxes as well, and the numbers of those being restricted for some of those absentee ballots. As we've told you before on the program, Democrats insist this is all about trying to make it harder for their constituencies to vote, particularly minorities, African Americans, and in Texas as well, Latino Americans. But the Republicans say no, this is about securing the election. And in terms of election security and that conversation, this has been a week in which former President Donald Trump has once again advanced the entirely false narrative that last year's presidential election was stolen from him, and endorsed an audit of the results of those elections that is being carried out in the state of Arizona. An absolutely extraordinary audit in which ballot papers are now being held up to ultraviolet light in a bid to establish whether any of them have traces of bamboo in them. And if you're wondering why they'd be looking for traces of bamboo, it is because one of the conspiracy theories embraced by President Trump and his supporters suggests that thousands, tens of thousands of ballots were illegally printed in Asia and then sent to Arizona, where they ended up being counted in the presidential election. No evidence whatsoever to support this claim, but they are literally sitting in an arena in Phoenix, Arizona, looking at individual ballot papers to see if they can come up with any that have traces of bamboo in them. So, look, there is no extensive voter fraud in the United States. Not a single factual study has found any, but the Republicans continue to look for it in last November's election, continue to litigate that election, and in places like Texas, continue to introduce voting bills, changing voting laws that on the face of them appear to be somewhat controversial.
That's really extraordinary. Simon, as always, thank you so much for talking to us here in Singapore and keeping us updated. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Cheers, Justine. I'll talk to you then.
Simon Marks there, our US Bureau Chief in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for listening to Simon Marks Reporting. And if you like what you heard, click the subscribe button and come back soon for more. And I'd love it if you'd give me a review. Those can be hugely helpful in spreading the word. Thanks a lot. More from me soon.